Hello.
Hi, Lance. Stand by.
You are listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth.
Yes, indeed. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, and good planet. Good awakening. Good awakening, everybody. Everybody who's awake at this time, whether it's in the morning or in the evening, if you're awake and if you're aware, good awakening. I think we're going to have to adopt new things. Time is going to change. I'm not going to bang on about it right now, but it's good to say hello. And I like a good greeting. And so anyway, tonight my guest is, I would like to say, an elder of internet radio, an elder, somebody who's like been around so much and spoken to a lot of what I call luminaries. And so much like when I was young, we used to have chestnuts and conkers, and you know, somebody who would break the conker that broke 50 conkers would make those, you know, it would become more than 50. It would add that tally to its own conker. I'm going to shut the heck up now. But tonight, I'm very pleased to welcome not only my co-host, Nancy Hopkins, but also the grandfather of Mystic Radio, Zany Mystic, Lance White himself. Good evening, Lance. How are you?
Good evening, JP. Thank you for that nice introduction.
Ah, bless your heart. So this is the thing, you know, we're here at a very major juncture in human history, and we're here at the last Uranus-Pluto conjunction, or not conjunction, square, and it's about to happen tomorrow, and people are already feeling the pinch of it. To me, it felt like a mortar and pestle, you know, like one more plunge of the petal into the mortar to crush up any more human-minded crystallization to allow the fluid spirit to move through. I don't know where you'd like to take it, but that's the kind of theme that I'd like to go with this evening is like your collective consciousness of the many guests that you've spoken with, and
it's been 9 years on the radio since I started with BBS, and you know, it's been really a wonderful experience because I never did get the chance to finish college or get an education, so I turned in a spiritual direction and I haven't looked back since. And I've been able to speak with just about everybody that I've admired and felt had something to share. And, you know, you can go back to the old shows and they stand up today. I just posted one yesterday from, 2009 that I did with Laura Eisenhower. And, you know, I'm going back to these things and I'm thinking, jeepers, creepers, you know, I really had a lucky streak there. And of course, luck has nothing to do with it. It's kind of like following the breadcrumbs and, you know, just allowing the universe to take me wherever it goes, like the fool in the tarot deck.
But it's not... But it's not that much of a fool, is it?
Well, I wouldn't say that, but you could. Yes, you're right. So about that Uranus-Pluto square, I've had Barbara Hand Clow on the show a number of times, and she's one of the people that I've admired quite a bit for her shamanic work and her writings, her teachings, And she is kind of an underground, not really underground, but she is an expert on these seven exact squares that started in 2012. And according to her, she just wrote an article that's called This Too Shall Pass. And according to her information, the seventh Uranus-Pluto square is March 16th, 2015, which here is today. Now, where you are, it might be tomorrow. So, right here now, I'm in it, and we've been in it for some time, and I think a lot of people have felt it, especially during the last few days. But we've had seven of these exact squares, and they started in 2012. And I think that now that we have some space to look back, and especially after this one hits, and it's going to be a doozy, and now that we have the space to look back, this is kind of like the completion of the revolutionary 60s. So anybody that was around during the 60s, and I was in Los Angeles for part of that, and I got to see the movie Hair. And that was when I had grown my hair long and was wearing bell bottoms and moccasins in Los Angeles. And I'll tell you, Hair was just a wonderful experience, and I just, you know, it was a whole different era. And of course, many people experienced it here there in San Francisco, and that was really where the Love Flower Children came out, and the LSD and free drugs and free love movement. And I thought that was just a wonderful experience because it was so authentic. And so we all just felt it, you know. We knew we were one. And, of course, the subsequent squares had other lessons to teach us, and we weren't ready to complete that. But now is the completion of that bookend. I look at the 60s as the one part of the bookend which began the journey, and this is the, for many people who are cycling off and doing other things, then this is like the closing act of the play. And I chose to be here so that I could enjoy and participate in the closing show, and then everybody gets to take a bow. So it's pretty exciting.
It so is. It's a very, very interesting time. I just wanted to bring in my co-host and your erstwhile guest, your recent guest, Nancy. Do you want to say hello to everybody?
Nancy. Hi, Nancy.
I am here, Lance.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I got to tell you that I don't have much time to follow you because you're so prolific, for one thing, but your insight and from just understanding the historical relationship of the 60s to now, I find fascinating, because of course I was a 60s generation. I am a 60s generation. And what I find very intriguing is that when we were back there doing what we were led to do, and the emotions that we encountered of unity as individuals, is now, you know, 40 years later, plus the happening again. And you know, history is going to repeat itself. But the beauty of it now is that we have, my dad, when I was at the University of Massachusetts in the 60s, and when we, Kent State had just happened, where the kids had gotten killed by the National Guard. And so in protest, we, the senior class, were going to refuse to go to the graduation. And I was trying to explain it to my father, and he said, you know, he said, I understand what you're saying, and I wish it could happen the way that you're saying it can happen, but nothing changes. And God bless my father. For about 50 years, he was right. But now he is on the other side and faster than light, but knows that, no, it is changing. The change is absolutely undeniable. And it comes from people like you and Doug, who started out so early, and then JP and Dave Corso, they jumped into it. And it's not an easy arena to manage. Especially, we have problems technologically. I can't imagine what you confronted way back when. But you also were able to give voice to people that we now know their names, we know who they are, who didn't have a name at the time. So I honor what you've done. It's really an amazing path that you've taken. You and JP, because like I say, JP came in a little bit after you, but it's a very difficult path that people, you know, nobody makes money at it. It's out of the heart and out of the dedication to mission that people become informed. So I am so grateful to call you a friend.
Oh, me too, Nancy. And one of the things that we share historically is the shooting of the president. You get into that in your book, Cosmic Reality, which is really a terrific read. I'm still working on it. And I'm just going back and savoring some of the finer details, because it's really information that we all need to have access to and we need to understand. And it's a great book for people who have already gone down the rabbit hole, but it's also especially useful for people who are just now waking up and who really want to get a crash course in what's going on planet Earth, and not just a peek behind the curtain of the wizard, but you actually pull the curtains wide back, and you do it with a really talented skill, because you were in places that allowed you to verify what you're talking about, and you ask questions that make people think. And so we contemplate various possibilities, and we know that none of us has the ultimate truth, and that we can't claim that anything is this way or that way, because each one of us is in our own universe, and in a sense, we're all gods in our own universe. So the arguments about things are really just much ado about nothing. One thing that I thought I'd share is that during the 70s, I was inspired by the works of G.I. Gurdjieff and starting with P.D. Ouspensky's book, The Fourth Way. I just got it. I was so excited about finding an esoteric school, because I knew that that was the way to changing consciousness. And what they said just rang true, that man is born with the potential for becoming fully conscious, but he has to complete himself. And the more I read, the more I realized that the truth of it. And so I found an esoteric school, and in my book, The Tales of a Zany Mystic, at Amazon Books, don't worry about buying it, you can download it for free on Kindle. But I talk about those days, and I say, finding an esoteric school is not like going shopping. You should exercise more caution before you buy the product. And there were a lot of wonderful days in those early days at the Fellowship of Friends. And it was purported to be a conscious teaching. And I became good friends with two of the original members, Stella and Harold Work, which some people that listen to this will know them. Stella was a magnificent being, an awakened being. And when I went to my prospective student meetings in Malibu, there was a German who was leading the meeting, and everything was very strange. You know, they demonstrated how we're not conscious, and one of the students walked out with a bowl of flowers on her head and to create a moment of awakening. Because in our normal state, we're not awake, usually. And it takes some kind of shock to snap us to the present moment, this now. And so I found all that interesting, but it seemed very formal and stilted. Well, at the break, there was a huge woman who looked like a cross between Phyllis Diller and, Auntie Mame. And she had lots of mascara on and green eyeshadow, and I think she was wearing a feather boa and smoking up a storm and talking about awakening. And so I gravitated out to that table, and we became friends after I joined the school, and she really nailed it. I mean, she was an awakened being. So I was studying the idea and the reality of putting consciousness into practice every day for, 4 or 5 years with other people from around the world. And that really kind of set the tone for the rest of my experience here. That's where, and now here we are, 40 years later, and this today is the last of the seven squares from 2012 to 2015. This is the end, and the beginning as well. And then we have some very interesting things happening that occur in the next few days and week. And I know that some people follow. I'm not a big proponent of the person who is Cobra who talks about the event, but he's got some good material out there. And he is saying that the 17th, which is tomorrow, is the reset, and that is the date for the event. So there's a possibility that there will be some major shifts that will occur tomorrow. And according to the information that they have on their website, it looks like a lot of this has to do with the rounding up of the current cabals, various factions in the cabals that are destroying the world and ruining it, killing us, and killing us intentionally, and milking us for energy and money and the rest of it. And that is supposed to happen tomorrow.
Lance,
so that could be an interesting day.
Yes, indeed. And what's very interesting is that the when you mentioned it, when you said it just now, I have a PST on this computer, so I looked down at the clock, and it was 17:17, and it's March the 17th. So,
I just looked up and saw the same thing.
So I think we may be onto something. Like I said, this is what I believe to be a historic moment, a really, truly historic moment. You can have a drama, or you can watch the fireworks. I think that's the attitude that I'm going to be taking over the next few days. It's got to be fireworks. It's got to be like, okay, look, it's going to be a roller coaster. So jump in the front, you know. don't have a big breakfast.
Well, don't we all like a wild ride? I mean, come on. I think most of us that are here listening have done a lot of wild and crazy things in their day, and some still are. And we came in to have that experience. So the people who held back because they were afraid that they were going to be judged in the great God in the sky, and that they'd be sent to hell, are just basically, they've put a damper on what life is about, which is to live it fully and authentically, and they are going to find out that they lost out. And people who have near-death experiences, they claim to go to the other side, and they look at their life review, which is everything they've ever done since birth, and they see it from three different perspectives. So there is a record of every moment in our lives, and most people live their lives as if they're secret and private. There is no privacy, because even though there wasn't a great surveillance system in place when we were born, although there probably was anyway, they're the Akashic record. So there's a holographic record of every moment in our lives and every thought that accompanied and went with those moments, including our emotions. So whether we like it or not, our lives are transparent. And we're moving into a time when we understand that from the heart, and when our consciousness expands to live that experience fully. So we will be able to see through things, people who are not authentic or are manipulating or lying. And I don't think we'll really have to worry too much about the people who have been doing the dirty deeds, because I don't think we're going to be in the same place. I just feel like this is a major transition. And I've been fooled many times. In fact, you know, I was one of the people that was just dying for 2012 to come about, because I thought, you know, there were going to be crystalline staircases floating out of the sky, and we were going to be ascending. I mean, I was really in imagination about that. I really fell big for the illusion. But that's okay, because it forced me to look at my belief systems, and I understood that it's important to hold your beliefs loosely and not have anything too rigid, because we're going to be assaulted with information. I'm already being assaulted with information, and I've had my head and neck down the rabbit hole so long that, you know, I look like you know, Alice in Wonderland when her neck stretched out you know, several miles. And still there are going to be so many shocks to all of us, that things that we didn't know. You know, we've tried to dig deep into the matrix and see what's going on, just because that's our nature, is to know what the truth is. And there's a feeling that, you know, justice has not been served when people have pulled stunts that are truly horrific and seem to get away with them. And that's always bothered me. And any authentic human will feel that. And the people that are presently falling, and will be falling in the next, you know, period of time, they don't have that feeling. You know, they've divorced themselves from the feeling of empathy, and we're nothing. We're, if anything, we're held in great contempt. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the world as these events unfold. And on the 20th, the Pisces solar eclipse occurs just 4 days after today. And according to Clow, she says, this will unleash the ability to integrate the radical changes brought by the seven great squares and make personal choices for serious change. And the spring equinox, 13 hours after the eclipse, will celebrate this great turning. The new moon is in 29 Pisces, the degree that opened the age of Pisces 2,000 years ago. And precession causes the great ages to move in reverse. So when the age of Aries completed itself around 200 BCE, the sun precessed from zero Aries back into 29 Pisces, the same degree as this eclipse. The Pisces solar eclipse signals something will happen that will eventually end perpetual Piscean duality, because the light and dark, the yin and the yang, God or no God, have been sufficiently explored. And I truly feel that we're in for some big changes, and they're happening right now. We're in them.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, Lance, is guess when? My birthday is the day after tomorrow. Right?
Wow.
So all this is personal.
Yes, it is. Yes. Amazing, isn't it, that the universe has personal messages for each of us as we awaken and see the synchronicity of things?
That's right. So... I didn't mean it to happen this way. Actually, what I wanted to do was find a little cave somewhere and retreat for 6 days or so while this was going on. But obviously, here I am, I didn't. And
no furloughs. No furloughs.
No furloughs. I don't know really exactly what that means. Does that mean like time off? to help.
That's right. A furlough is a military time off. So that's why we keep saying it. No more furloughs for the duration of this, you know, next couple of months.
Right. Okay. So this is until May the 20th, isn't it? From what I understand. And it's
And beyond.
We do similar things. You and I, and Nancy as well. Now we're bringing people together. We're bringing people with thoughts together, and like it's a bit like creating a parallel computer. You know, you have all these independent thoughts, and then you bring them all together, synthesize what everybody's thinking to get a kind of overall picture. Of what, you know, from many different facets. So what do you see as the factions that are involved in what we're about to witness in the next few days and weeks?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah. Well, you know, about 2 years ago, I did a series of videos at Mount Shasta. At the equinox. It wasn't the spring equinox. I think it was, well, anyway, it was, maybe it was the solstice. Anyway, we were at Mount Shasta, and Andrew Bartzis wanted to get the galactic history down on record. And so a friend of mine invited me to drive down to Shasta to be the interviewer, and we just kind of do it impromptu and let it roll. We ended up doing 20 half-hour videos in about 3 days. So we did, the first day we did 6 or 7 half-hour videos back-to-back, and we set up a little bedroom in the lodge, which was at Stewart Mineral Springs, an incredible place to stay. They were having shamanic, there were people doing the what do you call it when you go out and you have to stay there and you're stuck and you can't have cell phones and all that? It's a ritual. Anyway,
sweat lunch?
The shaman, they were out in the mountain and they couldn't leave. It's a transformational experience, and something's not letting me get that name, but that was going on at the same time. We were at the equinox, and there was a full moon during that process again. So synchronicity just brought us together. And in those 20 videos, Andrew and I talked about just about everything that you can imagine and then some. And I'll tell you, it's mind-blowing information even today. I suspect that it will be people who come behind us will probably just be astonished at the wealth of material that's there. And one of the things he talked about, being directly in the presence of the Akashic Records, he said, was the various factions and cabals. And so these are all extraterrestrial groups that are incarnate, and there's technology involved that is so far beyond our comprehension that it boggles the mind. For people who want to watch the videos or get the transcripts that I did myself, you can go to www.galactichistory.com and watch them for free. It's a fascinating series, and most people have. The Israelis have a device, a place that is multidimensional, and they're able to meet with the other members of the multidimensional beings. And there are factions. The major factions are spotted throughout the major points in the globe. And they have technologies that are that they have in place. Some of them, for instance, in Russia, the Russian people secretly were trying to decode this machine that is in the heart of Russia. And they finally broke the code, and it is a device which allows them to literally, like the movie Stargate, is it Atlantis? Yeah, Stargate Atlantis, to lift the whole city out of this time frame. And they apparently had to do that once during a critical period. And so they know the technology. They can do that. They can get out and take off like the Stargate Atlantis. So that's just one thing. There are many others. But what's happening is that all of these different players that have been placed in position have to show their cards. And this is the time when they have to do it. And the results are going to be, it's like a 55 million year card game. And at the beginning of that card game, there were time wars, there were alien wars, there were time wars to get the first ascension species. I mean, it was just, the Atlanteans were involved, the Lemurians were involved. I mean, it's just, it's a story that just boggles the mind. And they knew that 2014, 2015 would be the time when they had to show their cards. And so they knew that they had all this time to do their monkey business, and that they could probably outsmart the system by then. And since they move in and out of time, that seemed like a likely proposition. But nonetheless, there are some moments that are set in stone, and this moment is one when the timelines all have to collapse. All the false timelines that go nowhere, that, you know, people followed and it was a dead end, all of those have been collapsed, and that happened during 9-1-1. That was also a collapse of the timelines. And now, the period that we're in is the time when the cards have to be laid on the table. That means that whatever the people have done, it has to come out. And the chips have to fall where they will. And I can see that starting to happen already, because 9-1-1, which in my estimation was a false flag event designed by these various factions together, and the bankers, along with, you know, the military and the three-letter agencies, not all of the people there, but just the ones that are in on the hoax, and the global domination of system and system of domination and control, secret societies, and the Vatican, and so on, and the Mafia. Let's not exclude them, because they have a heavy hand in this. They all pulled together to pull this off, and they're using, as far as I can tell, according to Judy Wood, free energy devices from either nearby, from a Hadron Collider, or from space. It doesn't really matter where they're using them from. And they've reversed the free energy, and when you reverse that device, it becomes a weapon. And it does the kinds of things that you saw when the buildings collapsed in, 14 seconds. I think, Nancy, you said something about, try to clap 80 times in how many seconds?
11 seconds.
11.
It fell at the speed of, you know, of just gravity.
And if anybody actually tries that, they'll see, well, I can't even clap 80 times. There were 80 floors. If I can't clap that fast, this couldn't have been a natural event. It could not have been. And once the mind grasps the paradox, then all of the belief systems and the mind control and the propaganda and the illusion, the props of the old paradigm collapse, just like the buildings. And that signals the end of duality. Once people see the truth as it is, and the rose-colored glasses have been removed, they cannot deny the truth any longer. They have to admit to themselves that they were wrong. And the only reason why people are in such major denial is largely due to the continued use of advanced technologies to keep us mired in and muddled and befuddled and distracted. And it's just a game of smoke and mirrors, and really signifying nothing when you really boil it down. And then individually, we have our own shadows that we're concealing, and that is the secret of revealing the truth, is because when we have to look at the world as it is and admit it, that's when our own shadow rises up, and we have to process that. And so many people have been processing their dark side or shadow side for decades, years, and healers and various other people, you know, it doesn't matter what you do, but in many people understand that to evolve, we have to let the shadow, we have to understand ourselves, know thyself. And so the people who have been doing this work will accelerate during this period that we're in right now, and it will be like a whoosh. It will feel like a fast moment that we just whoosh through, and we'll be on the other side of the event, or the event horizon, if you want to call it that. You could say easily, you could use the imagery of we're going through a black hole universe through the eye of a needle.
Hey, Lance, how about one of these? Where'd he go? Hang on. No. wish the jingle machine... Hang on, the jingle machine will just work for me when I do this.
Okay.
And there we are on the other side. In a new room, you see?
Just exactly. Like that. That's it.
Let me jump in here for a minute, because I have an internal clock that I'm really good with to find out where I am in a show. And I think time is somehow warping, because we're only in 36 minutes into this show. And this show feels like it's been going on for at least 60.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys have got that feeling, but it feels like that time is suddenly starting to drag for some peculier reason. I just like to point out things I'm observing. They're my observations, but somebody else may, you know, pick up on it too. So
that's good. That's good. Let's make the most of all this spare time that we have into cramming as much wisdom and information and concept. And except really, we want to. The thing to put across is it's about a place to be acting from, which is a kind of intelligent, heartfelt perception of our universe from many dimensions, not just from a kind of left-right standpoint or a past-future standpoint, but being able to stand in the center of all of those be an example of the balance is not just a left and right thing. There are more dimensions in which we need to balance ourselves.
Absolutely. And plus, you know, creating. You know, what kind of world are we creating? What do you want to create? If we're creator gods, then, you know, for instance, you probably both have your own vision for what you would like the world to more or less be like when we pass into it. And then we're creating it now. Do you want to put that into words? Like, you know, JP, what kind of new world would you create? What do you envision when that cord goes off again? And same thing with Nancy.
Well, I'll take it first, because
Okay, let's try. Let's use the TARDIS. Oh, no. That's the Bolfus. Let's use the TARDIS.
Okay, when we would actually discuss this.
What's happening? I love that. I love Doctor Who.
All right, so now we're in Nancy's future universe, or Nancy's current universe.
It's actually Nancy's current universe. We've talked about this because what we have discovered is that every time we try to go into the to plan out a future, we limit the creative God Gaia. And so if you don't do it with a mental picture of what you want, but you focus on what you want to feel, you are likely to get something that is much more expansive than you ever could have imagined. So instead of thinking what's going to make you happy, say, I want to feel happy, I want to feel joy, I want to feel love, I want to feel, you know, that I've got a mission that I am accomplishing and that I've got, you know, put those things in and let that manifest for you. So that's the way that that I look at it. Jay, how do you?
So, over in Dimension JP, I have my own time zone, JPMT, because you know I live in Britain, but like I sleep in the daytime. I don't know why. That's the way. So currently, anyway, so. Basically, there was a universe already there, and this is what I think they talk about timeline genocide or timeline stealing, is that, you know, we're all here on the crappy one because it's been stolen from us, kind of in some way that all our good dreams have been stolen and kind of inhabited by all these parasitic creatures, and we have to live this crappy life here in this timeline, right? And partly that we're here to kind of scoop out the people who are still here, the last remaining humans, and before this thing drops into oblivion. There's that kind of feeling as well. So yeah, there's a kind of gloominess to it, but there's a it's maybe a karmic thing about. Not wanting to leave anyone behind.
Oh yes, I have that too. Yeah. I talked to Anelia Benz a lot about this kind of stuff because she became a friend of mine after I had her on the show a few times, and we drove down to Santa Barbara together when she was doing a meet and greet. So I got a chance to, you know, kind of see how she is. You know, off the record, and she's the same person, but much more, but a little funnier, and also she's got some great stories to tell. But I ask about this, and I was very disappointed when she said that, well, there are a lot of people who don't want to shift. They want things, they want to remain in duality. And there's a resolution for this, because everybody can get what they want, and also end up ascending at the same time. So anything is possible, and I think that, you know, I don't want to limit my experience by trying to create something that I may be another box. I'm really good at catching the boxes that the various galactic civilizations and the cabals are trying to put us in. And it said that they want to, you know, create this next age, and it's going to be fabulous. You know, we have to be careful about what the Matrix shows us, because they're going to roll out some very convincing things. High technology, ability to expand your brain with a chip inside and to do this and do that, jump tall buildings and all kinds of biological enhancements and so on and so forth. But I see that as just the beginning of another chain of enslavement. It's just a bigger sandbox. And I personally don't feel that it's necessary to rely on technology to expand, because we have consciousness, and we're made as above, so below. We're made as Gaia is, and the planetary bodies to create with thought. So I like that idea, and I like aligning with her in an organic process. So I don't know what that will be like, and I'm willing to live in the question mark.
You know, to me, it's a bit like some poor creature that's been in the zoo, like a bear that's been in a circus or in a zoo and is always held in chains,
suddenly being that the chains are broken, or there's this lovely it's really sad. There's the laboratory beagles that have never seen the outside world. They're suddenly released into a grassland, and they they timidly touch the soil around them. They just mostly sit in the cage. You can open the door and they don't go anywhere. They don't, and you know, if anybody knew what beagles are like. I used to live with a woman who had beagles. My girlfriend had beagles, and they were insane. They would escape at every opportunity and look for every opportunity for food, and they were incredibly curious creatures. To see these same creatures with these same character looking and sitting in the cage and not like, you know, that wouldn't be the kind of beagle character that I expect. And so that was a real, that was really heartbreaking for me to see that. And that's a metaphor for how humans have been for a long time.
Oh, well, it's the Plato's concept of the shadows on the cave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the people in the cave thought that reality was the shadows, and even given the opportunity to see another reality, they decided to sit in front of the shadows because that's what they knew. That's why it takes courageous people to go out and to, you change reality when you change your way of thinking. And if you understand that you're the center of your reality and that you do have that kind of control, when you make the change to a frequency that is based on emotions and signals that are positive in nature, you know, full of compassion and empathy. It seems like compassion and empathy are what will prevent wars and treating people badly. And if you've got that going with you, then you can't really hurt anybody because it's just going to come back and smack you. But if you've got that kind of movement towards a new future, the most important thing we have in our to do this is our own beingness, the way we're thinking. Because if we begin to resonate at a pure frequency, we will cause people around us to resonate at the same frequency. And I think that's why I want to ask you about the 1990s. Remind me. I don't want to forget that. But when we have this resonance that's just making everybody else start to vibrate at the same energy that we have, you're not going to lose anybody. Because mm-hmm. as one after another, they start vibrating, everybody will. And I came here, I don't know if you got to the part in the book talking about the 1990s, because I wonder if you weren't one of the people that actually jumped timelines, because we were on an ascension path, and I was approached and asked, you know, did I want to continue or did I want to jump timelines to a very bad timeline? That needed a lot of
help. The crappy one. That's the one I'm talking about. We're on the crappy one.
The
worst one. The stuff one. The one with all the stuff. If anybody was listening to Studio A earlier on, they'll know what I mean. The stuff one. I've been on here for 3.5 hours now, guys. I mean, I'm starting to go a bit stir crazy. We're here on what seems to be the crappiest timeline, and to looking for whatever humans are left. And I tell you, you're going to have to be pretty human to be left by this Thursday. That's all I'm going to say. Because it's going to happen globally. It's going to happen in your own personal life. And if you don't laugh, people, if you don't laugh at what's going on, you're not getting it. And you'll get it.
Yeah.
You get it in the ass. Can I say ass? Is that FCC regulations? I ass. Meanwhile, aside from bottom jokes and hang on. Oh, no, that never works. Oh, yes. We have a question from the Wolf Spirit Radio chat room from Dolly saying, is he saying that he thinks this is going to be the end of what is now and the beginning of new, like the Antichrist takeover? And Colleen is saying, if you ask me, the Antichrist took over quite some time ago. Now maybe it's time for the Antichrist.
Boom, boom.
Right. Right.
Yes. Meanwhile,
we could use a little anti-mame.
Yeah, that's right. So, I think it's.
I think Hitler was, if you want an Antichrist enough, isn't Hitler enough? Wasn't that enough?
Or do we have to have global Hitler? Maybe we need to have global Hitler to really put it into your, what do you want? Do you want someone like this, or do you not? This is what the choice is. Someone there is, or somebody not. Okay. Hey, what do you think, Lance? Antichrist, all this stuff, it's a bit kind of framing it, isn't it, as another box.
Well, yeah, that's a difficult way of phrasing things because it is a part of the propaganda that's nurtured in the Matrix, and that is part of the mind control that keeps us spinning in our heads and our minds rather than moving into the heart. And because the heart is where the action is. There's a mind in the heart. The physical heart has a mind. The first two cells that are created when a baby is being formed and splits is the mind in the heart. So that is the mind or the chamber that we want to access, not the physical mind that's in the brain. You know, the Egyptians, when they mummified the bodies, would put a long wire device, like a coat hanger with a hook on it, and run it up the nose, and they'd twirl it around until the brain was liquefied, and then they'd pour it out onto the ground. And then they'd carefully take the heart out and wrap it and put oils, because they knew that that's where the seat of the soul is. And so there's the Christ and the Antichrist concept is a dualistic thought form that is not real. It is a creation of duality, and that's what keeps us mired in the illusion, because we have difficulty conceiving of anything that's not black or white, right or wrong, good or bad. And everything in the media is written that way to get us to think like that, and it's faulty thinking. It's simply two-dimensional thinking. It's not even three-dimensional thinking. So we have to begin to learn to think outside the confines of the construct, and it's a very clever construct. You know, we're in a nine-dimensional matrix, and we're only at 3D on the physical level, so we're being told that we're ascending to a 4D or 5D. I know one New Age teacher that I did a number of radio shows with quite a few years ago, and she said that we're going to 4D, and I couldn't get her to entertain the idea that what about 5D? What about no, we're going to 4D, and anything else was, you can't talk about it. So now there's a big push in the New Age movement. We're ascending to 5D. Oh my God, because we have to take steps. We have to take baby steps. We can't get to 60 without going through 5D. Well, that's bullshit. That is just a lie and a distortion. We are all multidimensional beings that are in every dimension simultaneously right now. Our consciousness permeates all things, including the no thing in which matter resides. That's a quantum field. And so the matter world is not important. It's just a fraction of the reality that we can access when we're expanded beyond matter. We are the space between the atoms and the molecules. And so if you start to think about that and expand your consciousness into a higher, more vast experience of yourself, that we're not just these bodies, we're not just this in this universe. The material planes are all corrupted, in a sense, and they don't even exist. Nancy and I were talking about that on Saturday, that the walls don't exist. The space between atoms and molecules is vast. And so, and a lot of people have seen What the Bleep Do We Know, and they explain it all there at the quantum physics level. And it's so strange, isn't it, that quantum physicists can stimulate one quark and another quark, no matter where it is in the universe that they're looking at, instantly has the same information. And there's no gap in time. It's instantaneous. So Einstein's theory about light is being the fastest speed we can travel is also more bullshit. He knew that that wasn't true, but he had to tell us the lie, because everybody that speaks for the Matrix has to conform to as much information as they want us to get. And that was the limit of what we were allowed to know. And we still think that light, nothing can travel faster than the speed of light. Well, that's ridiculous. And, you know, that's just one of the many ridiculous ideas that we have to let go of, because it's just wrong. It's not accurate. It's a distortion. Everything is instantaneous. So any question that involves time, like, when is this going to happen, or what is going to happen? And if it involves duality, like the Christ and the Antichrist, all of that has happened already. Remember, there's more than two realities. There is a positive, negative, and a neutralizing force in all things that are created. And so they're not just two things that go back and forth like the swing of the pendulum. There isn't just male and female. And people get stuck on that one, you know, that in the next world there's going to be men and women. Well, there are galaxies where there are just men and men, or they're just, you know, this and that, and women and women, and, you know, androgyny.
Lance, we've got to take a break. Lance,
oh, good.
This is a hard break. I can't do anything about it. So we'll be back in a few minutes, and don't go away. We've got Lance White, the zany mystic. Yeah, he's being very zany, very mystic. Hi, much mystic, many zane.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
On the verge of the event, here we are, speaking with Lance White, the zany mystic of BBS Radio. Tell us about how that started, Lance, because there wasn't much going on the internet in those days. In terms of, well, I mean, still people had didn't have broadband so much. They had like dial-ins and bulletin boards were you know, people would they weren't a network thing. They would be separate computers that people would dial into before the internet. So were you doing a radio station on that foundation, or was it the later kind of, once it had been interneted?
Well, I started in about 2006, and it's kind of an interesting story, because I'm living on a small 3-acre ranch that my father left to me, and I was planning on writing my life story and getting something down on paper, and it was, which I did in 2007. But in 2006, I got an email from Don Newsom at BBS Radio, one of the twins, the two twins that own the BBS Radio. Excuse me. And they are wonderful people. I didn't know Don, but I was very active in Yahoo groups and, you know, researching star seeds and indigos and tracking down Daniel Jacobs and the reconnections and, you know, Liara of Operation Terra. And I was just, there was a huge spirit library thing. I was just soaking up information like a sponge. And in 2006, I got his email in my inbox, just very short, And it was from Don. He said, would you like to have your own radio show? And I didn't reply right away, but my first reaction was, what? Me do a radio show? I don't know anything about doing radio. I mean, I couldn't possibly do that. I don't know anything about it. And you know, so the first thing that popped up were my limitations and shutting down the possibility. And I sat on it overnight, and then I thought, wait a minute. I don't know what's going to happen when I do this, and I might fall on my face, but I will always regret having to wonder what might have happened if I had accepted what showed up in my universe. And so instead of turning it down, I said, okay. And I didn't get a lot of information from Don about how to do it or how to get guests or anything else. It was really pretty bare bones back then, but it was the framework that allowed me to contact people and get them as guests. And so I had listened to some of the shows on the, and I was also listening to other radio hosts, and I thought, you know, some of these hosts on BBS radio are pretty awful. I could do better than that, because they'd stutter or they'd stall or they'd talk, you know, over the guest, or they do more talking than the guest. And I thought, okay, one thing that's really important is to let the guest talk. You know, that was really important, because people aren't here to listen to me. So that was one of the things that I did, was I thought, okay, I will focus on letting the guest talk and share, because I think that's what people really want. That's what I wanted. And so I saw that that was a big mistake that a lot of talk show hosts make. And so that was one of the big things I wanted to correct. And then I realized that I would have to have guests. So I thought, what kind of guests do I want? I had just read a book called Going Deeper by Jean-Claude Coven, and it was a wonderful metaphysical ride. It's about a guy who has his life is kind of stalled, and he doesn't know really what he's doing, and he's in a good situation financially, but you know, things are just so-so. And he decides to get a dog, and fate brought him a dog, a talking dog. The dog can actually talk. And of course, he goes through the process of, what? This can't be real. You're not talking to me, are you? And the dog would say, yes, I'm trying to tell you that your life has more to offer than what you're doing right now. And so they get into these metaphysical conversations. Long story short, the dog makes him go on a journey, a quest, and it's a really fun tale. And so somehow I got Jean-Claude's phone number from the radio station, and you know, being kind of an idiot at the time, and I'm pretty dense most of the time. I just stumble into things and I just do it. I called him at his home, and it was, you know, my first radio show, and said, "Hi, is this Jean-Claude?" Yes. Well, my name is Lance White, and I'm hosting a radio show, and I just wonder if you'd like to be on it. I just read your book, and he said yes. So that was the beginning of Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. And the reason why it ends up that title is because Don said that if you put an A in front of Fireside Chat, it'll be the first one to show on the list. So you'll get top billing. And I thought, well, that sounds good to me. I mean, you know what you're doing. I'll just trust you. You know. Okay, so it's a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. And so he was my first guest. And years later, I got to meet him in Mount Shasta when I went to a conference to hear David Icke and him present. And David Icke was really fascinating. I mean, he's a very powerful speaker. Jean-Claude was, wow, he blew the socks off of me. And Jasmuheen was there, the Breatharian. So I eventually had Jasmuheen on the show a couple of times. And she's another wonderful person with a lot to share. And if the food chain gets any more degraded, we're going to have to become Breatharians. Because there won't be anything to eat that's, you know, has any life force.
Exactly.
In it.
And on that subject, this has been one of the things, is that during these Uranus-Pluto transits, one of the things that I've found is that I cannot eat very much. I feel very sick. Mm. And but the thing is, I am no less energetic for it. It is as if I don't need to eat this. It's like, phew, it's like you don't need to put this stuff into you. I'm strong enough to go through these 36 hours without eating or sleeping because I feel like a motor. And where the heck's this energy come from? You know, to me, we run on electricity. You know, we eat food. Food turns to sugar. Sugar turns to, it all turns to electricity. Because it's to run our fuel cells, and they're electric. We run on electricity. So if we can somehow harness the electricity directly from the atmosphere around us, then we shouldn't need to eat food, should we?
Absolutely.
And so now I got famous, I'll tell you. I'm famous, if you look on the internet, I'm famous for being the Millennium Man in the UK.
Ooh,
and one
nice.
Of the things that we... we're talking about then was like storing food, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, preppers. What eventually evolved to become preppers? Myself and my now ex-wife, we were sort of the archetypal prepper. except in Britain, we don't have guns. Aside from an air rifle that made the rabbits just laughed at me. Like, you fool, you fat fool, you fat blind, colorblind, astigmatic fool trying to shoot straight with that thing. You'll never get one up. Yeah, right. So anyway, I didn't tell him about the cat.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, the cat could kill and eat an entire bunny, leaving just the spleen and the large intestine.
Oh.
That was a real skill that they had. And they used to leave it for us. Here, clean this up, human. Anyway, cats. Hey, talking of cats, do you know, have you had anybody who's spoken about the cat people?
Oh, sure. Not a lot of people, but there have been a few guests over the years that have talked about that. And... I think they referred to them as Lirans. And Evie Lorgan has a lot of information about that on her website, which is called, the Love Bite.
Oh, yes, I had her on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, she is so wonderful. I adore her. She is absolutely...
Man, she speaks right from the heart. You can hear it, can't you?
Absolutely. And she's dug into the dark side. I mean, I don't think I'd want to go... I've dug deeply into it, but... there are people who really go into the demonic, negative ET alien stuff and all the different gods. I mean, that was where I first read an article by an Italian that she translated. And there are pictures of these various ETs and the levels of power that they have and the cloning facility. You know, how they clone and how they transfer consciousness, how they shift consciousness and so on. And she is really quite good at explaining how we get into relationships, especially her book is called The Love Bite, how we get into relationships with people that are toxic. They seem like they're our twin flame or twin soul or something, or our, you know, it was meant to happen, and it turns out that they are just demonic. I mean, they are. It's as if they were out to destroy us, and she says they are. That the entities that are playing with us here, and I wouldn't call it play. I'd call it, you know, hardball. They have the ability to see what your twin flame is, and then make a duplicate to create to find or create. Or have incarnate, however that happens, a duplicate that will be so close that, you know, you'll go for it, and that is called the love bite. And it's like a vampire that sucks your energy. And so that's how they keep a lot of the people who are holding a lot of the bright light at bay, and one of the tricks that they use, they're tricksters. So yeah, what were we talking about?
we went into one of these moments.
Well, I wanted to ask you a question. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, yeah, right. Ask away, because, you know, just...
Well, yeah, because I'm really curious about the UK, because I read a lot and I hear a lot about, you know, the Queen of England and the royal family being part of a reptilian or Anunnaki bloodline, and that the surveillance there is beyond belief. I mean, I see pictures of cameras going up, and I mean, and I think to myself, how do those people, why are they standing for it? And I'm just wondering, what's it like for you in the UK, or is it like it is for us here? We don't see it because it's like the forest through the trees.
Well, since I actually literally live in a forest, I'm kind of in a place that, well, it doesn't really matter, you know. The only thing that I ever do is go out of my house and do something in the garden, collect some eggs from the chickens, then go back in the house. So,
wow.
You know, so I live a very, very normal life.
Nice.
And because I write software, I can do work and fix laptops, and people come to me, and I don't need to go out, and it's great.
Oh.
So, here in the UK, I'm in the north of Scotland. I'm in the very, you know, I couldn't be further away from where I grew up, which was right in the middle of London. I actually grew up about a mile from the city of London, called Bethnal Green.
Wow.
So, you know, when I was a kid, I would take my car. Well, you could do it then. This is in the 60s and 70s, in the late 70s, mid-70s. I could drive around the city of London at night. Not a soul around. It was great. You could, what was that film? The French Connection. Or not that one. No, not The French Connection. The Italian Job. No, that's another one. But like that, driving around the city. It was great. Well, although I didn't drive up the steps of St. Paul's, that would have been a real fun thing to do. Drive up the steps of St. Paul's Cathedral in a mini. But, you know, those days are over now. Too many fences. They go, you know, you can, they didn't have those fences in those days. Everything had, everything was open and free. Meanwhile, back in London, so nowadays I couldn't go back to London. I certainly, number one, I couldn't deal with the psychic pressure. You know, I just really feel it. You know, I feel when people are in my house, get out of my house, go away. I can feel you.
Oh, yeah.
I can smell you. You know, you're trailing your, everybody I see, yeah, their residue. I feel like CSI New York. You know, there's their footprints glowing in the floor. Yeah. You know, you get to that sort of sensitivity of being around people or not. But so don't take it from me, because I'm a kind of hermit recluse kind of person.
Yeah, me too.
And probably because the way it is the way it is the it's a very highly observed situation. You can't do anything or go anywhere without being identified and logged, and your movements logged, and that connected with your Facebook account, and the photos from your Facebook account, and the photos that come off your web phone that have a EXIF data that has a GPS, that wherever you point your camera has got a GPS location and direction vector, and is stored along with the photograph. So you can then add that to the satellite tracking and the street tracking, and there you go. There's not many places you can go without somebody watching what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And probably
and yet,
the toilets.
When we were kids,
yeah.
We didn't have that growing up, did we? No.
No. No. I mean, that was in those days, to think of that would be a really sneaky thing to do. A horrible, only horrible people would do that. Wouldn't they? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Only a criminal enterprise would want to govern people in that sort of fashion.
Well, welcome to the Matrix.
Yeah. Yeah. So the question is, how do we deprogram the Matrix? How do we remove the cowling, the cloak that has been placed upon us, the virtual, what is that thing? Hijab. the hijab that has been placed over humanity in a way that we can't really see and experience the world completely because we've had some senses nulled off. I was talking today with Simon Parks, the have you spoken to Simon?
He's going to be on my show in a few days. We're doing a pre-record on Wednesday, and it will air on Saturday, two-hour
show. You will have a lovely time. He's a lovely man.
Oh, good, good.
Just think of the biggest questions you can.
Well, yes, I have my homework to do.
Yeah, just get to the pinnacle. Ask the questions of the you know, not necessarily just ask the best questions of, you know, because he can give you an answer to the best questions, and
that's my sense of him too.
Yeah.
And I love his interviews, I love his energy, and I kind of feel like he's a kindred spirit. And I have had an experience with mantids, just one, which was a dream, but it was so vivid that I can describe it right now as a picture in my head. I was sitting inside of a ship in a kind of a, I knew it was a ship somehow, you know, telepathically or psychically, and there were various beings sitting in kind of a circle, I guess, and it was, you know, not too, it was dimly lit, and people were communicating telepathically, and I was sitting right next to a mantid, and I got the most incredible feelings and the sense of intelligence and love, and it was, but it was not human love, it was different, and vast intelligence. And I from that moment on, I have always had a deep respect for, you know, the literal insect of the praying mantis, because surely they might have had a hand in creating, you know, some of the insects that we have here on the planet. I think that, you know, the truth is going to come out. It was not just the Anunnaki created humans and they blah, blah, blah. I think it's a much bigger picture than that. And I think that the mantids and a lot of other, you know, different races had a hand in it. So I've always loved mantids, and this, I will often find them crawling in the house. It's the strangest thing. I'll look up, and there will be a praying mantis on the ceiling. And I just take it as a sign, and I communicate with these insects. I had an insect that flew onto me the other day, and I just thought, wow, you're really beautiful. And they have antenna, and their antenna is extremely sensitive and powerful. So when you're talking to an insect, it literally broadcasts to the, you know, to the other elementals, and to the spirit of the planet. So you're talking to all insects when you talk to the one, and it is being broadcast because they have instantaneous communication. So if you understand that everything alive has intelligence and sentience, and you treat it like it's an equal, you're going to be amazed at the experiences that you'll have with little creatures that are just absolutely fabulous here. You know, birds and all of creation has its own beauty, all aspects of it, and including bacteria and algae and viruses probably have their own beauty. And that gets me onto a rant about the allopathic medicine that's being shoved down our throats and how we treat things by killing it. We have to stop killing things. That's just a program. It's an old program from the patriarchal society that is based upon the idea of removing things by killing them. And naturopathic medicines are going to be the way of the future, and we'll find that. And very near future, there were people who have been doing these things for years using light and sound and gravity, and there's going to be a blossoming. You know, when the medical industry collapses, which is and the pharmaceutical industry collapses, and the truth comes out about how they lace things with a disease intentionally. Bayer sent out vaccinations for disabled kids that had HIV virus in it. They discovered the virus, supposedly, and they didn't want to lose money on their products, so they just sent it out with the virus. So, you know, potentially thousands of people injected themselves with this vaccination and got the HIV virus at the same time. They love doing things like that. I mean, the people that sit on the boards of directors of these companies, they come up with this stuff, or they have think tanks that come up with the next evil thing that they can pull and make money off of. And then people get sick, they go to the medical profession. What do? They start killing you off by killing the disease or carving it out like a turkey. Well, that is barbaric. I mean, that is absolutely out of the dark ages when they put leeches on people to take the disease out. That probably makes more sense than what they're doing today. So, anyway.
Lance.
Yeah.
People want to know your website. People want to know, who is this man on Studio B?
Oh, okay.
Introduce yourselves to the one and all.
Oh, well, yes. All right. Well, my name is Lance White, and I'm known as the Zany Mystic. I have a show called A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic, and it is on BBS Radio, and you can get there easily by typing in www.afiresidechat.com. It's really simple. And that is my that's my really the main website I have on BBS. And I'm on Facebook. You just type in Lance White and friend me and follow my posts. I post a lot of material there to share information with friends. I have a lot of friends that have come from the radio show, and friends of friends, and friends of Anelia, and Michelle Walling, and Greg Prescott, and Laura Eisenhower. I mean, they're all wonderful people. You know, these are the really fun people to be with in the world. And so I've been posting a lot of articles there. You can find me there. And you can find the Galactic... Oh, I have a group there called the Galactic History Discussion Group. And I have a couple of wonderful people that help me, you know, with that group. And there's about 6,000 people in it now that were, you know, that are there. So it doesn't seem to matter how many thousands of people are there. I mean, you know, I'm just posting things that resonate to me and making comments and stuff like that. So those are three places where you can find me. And the other one is the www.galactichistory.com with the free videos and the transcripts that I did of those videos, and the 21st one being one I wrote.
Excellent. So did you do a kind of... You managed to take in all of Andrew's kind of enormous galaxy universe... multiverse, and condense it into one half-hour summary. That's amazing.
Well, yeah. Now, it is amazing. Well, what I did was, when I got back from Mount Shasta, I was in an altered state, and I couldn't wait to get the CDs that David Waterfall, who does two of the half-hour segments, or three, with Andrew, and he's really brings out a lot of material that I wouldn't have brought out, and asks questions that are really important. And so I was tired out, and I just needed to take a break, and it was, you know, like midnight, and well, we're going to go on. And so Andrew and David did, and David handled all the cameras and the sound, and mind you, this is just all done in a little bedroom of the Stewart Mineral Springs. And people had come in and taken curtains off the walls for a backdrop, and then put crystals on the thing. And I mean, it was really a hoot. You know, we'd go into the bathroom, and Helene Lipson would fix my shirt and get my collar right. And you know, I mean, it wasn't like it was on a big Hollywood production. It was really seat of the pants, and it made it a lot of fun. And then we'd go out during the break and have coffee, fresh coffee, and Larry Bazell would brew up coffee and bring in fresh food, and we were all in such a high state. Julian was there, Julian I'm having a brain fart. But anyway, a lot of wonderful people were there. And so I got home and was in an altered state, and then David sent me the CDs of the video. So I started watching them to see, well, what went on? Because I was interviewing the whole time. I was having to interview, and I was present for it, but I wanted to see what was this all about. And as I was listening, I thought, this is absolutely incredible information. And so for my own understanding, I started typing it out as a transcript, just so I could get it in writing, because I wanted to read it. And I'm more of a visual person, and I like to read things. And so I started typing, and I did the first transcript, and I did the first one in about a day or two. And then I thought, gee, a picture would be good right here, to describe the cabal. And I'd get a picture for it, and then a hyperlink here. So as I did these transcripts, I got more and more creative and better at, the first picture and the title and hyperlinks and pictures throughout and then staggering the picture. Anyway, it became fun. It got to be a kind of a chore around the eighth or ninth interview. But I got them all done. And so people can get those transcripts at that website. But the 21st, I wrote to kind of give a little background about me, who I am, where I come from, and what I thought about the 20 Galactic History videos. So it was a chance for me to, if people wondered, well, who is this guy that's, written all these transcripts and did the videos, I did a brief intro and explained, where I was coming from and that I had been infected with HIV in 1982 through the hepatitis B vaccination study, confluence of the World Health Organization. So I've been, dealing with that for 32 years, and I'm still alive. So if anybody thinks that you can't live through a discomfort or a disease, that's absolutely incorrect. It's just a belief system, and you have to be able to change, let go of that belief that you can live through anything and you can heal yourself, and that's the best way to do it. So I wrote my comments and opinions and the basically how I see the Galactic History interviews as far as their value goes, because people say, well, is this true or is it not true? Is this blah, 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 blah? Was he this? Was he that? We got to step out of dualistic thinking. And my idea, I can sum it up in one thing. What the Galactic History videos are valuable for is not so much telling what happened as opening the mind to the imagination and the power of the imagination and to new ideas. It cracks the mind open. And we have been so dumbed down and full of propaganda and lied to and kept in the dark about so many things. The Galactic History videos and transcripts, they just crack that wide open, and you can't get into it unless you're out of your mind. And that's a great place to be.
Out of your mind, out of the mental prison, yeah. And so this is the path. So here we are. All right, so do you reckon you could do a 15-minute summary of your half-hour summary?
I probably could. I'll bring it up in a PDF file and look at it, and it'll stimulate my memory.
Okay. So we're just looking at the ways to contact you, and there we've got Facebook is your lance.white.3348. And also, well, you're on galactichistory.com. I've got a few of my back interviews with Andrew when he first came out. He used to come on Wolf Spirit Radio. We've got a lot in the back of Wolf Spirit Radio archives, which are subscriber donated. So that's how we keep the station running, by subscriber donations, and as does the Revolution Radio. So if you wish to come to either and look at the vast number of archives. We've got so much. You won't find it on YouTube. You won't find it anywhere. You'll find it at Wolf Spirit Radio, and you have to be a member. At least $5. It doesn't cost much. It's nothing. You know, how much does a coffee cost in America nowadays? And you can like download infinite amounts for a whole month for that. So and still you'd be downloading. Still, it would be, keep going. Anyway. So tonight I'm talking with Lance White, and we were talking about Andrew Bartzis, the galactic historian, that Lance has recorded a 20 video series of Andrew's conversation and condensed his own version into about half an hour. And since Lance has already introduced himself, here is a condensation of the condensation of the condensation. We're almost boiling away, alchemically, getting to the prima mater. So take it away, Lance. Where are we at?
All right. Well, okay, so I'm reading from the 21st transcript, which is my own writing. And I did finish my book. It's called Tales of a Zany Mystic. And in this 21st transcript, I mentioned that my grandparents came out here. They were pioneers from Kansas, and they came out in a covered wagon. And so they were pretty interesting people, and very strong, and really they were my spiritual foundation. So one of the things that is really important about these transcripts is that I didn't have any notes. When I go into an interview, usually I have some backup questions that I'll be asking the guest in case I, you know, want to ask them something, and I've got something to fall back on. And I write a preamble to it. But in this case, for the 20 half-hour videos, I didn't have any notes. I didn't know Andrew. I had a few days to kind of get to know him out at the campfire in the mountains. But I hadn't spent a lot of time with him. And here we were, thrust together. Our knees were touching in a tiny bedroom. And we were in the now. And he created a field of no time to read the Akashic Records, is what he said. And I have to tell you, it really felt that way, because the time flew by. We'd talk for 30 minutes, and all I had was a notepad, just so that I had a prop to, you know, feel comfortable with, and a pen to take notes. And I really had no information written down about what I was going to ask or what. Nothing. None of the questions that I asked him were written down, and none of his responses were rehearsed. They were live and impromptu and fresh. So I have no idea where those questions came from. I knew that from doing the radio show that there's a script, and if I just get out of the way, the script just flows. And his responses were immediate. So whatever question I asked him, and it was just about everything I could pull out of the shoebox, you know, everything I wanted to know about the Cabal and Chernobyl and MK Ultra and Atlantis and Lemuria and our galactic history and everything that I wanted to ask, I had asked. And when I ran out of questions, I started asking about movie stars, like, you know, John Lennon and this and that and the other thing. And so the basic commentary is that it's no longer important or valid to blindly ask, is this true or not? For those who have cultivated thinking beyond duality, to what extent does any information resonate or map over what's held as viable possibilities? That's a good question to ask. Questions and negativity are overshadowed by the positive nature of these dialogues and the depth of detail, rich in imagination, wealthy in creativity. They have value as inspiration, expanding thought processes and consciousness outside the box of programmed beliefs. If this were a science fiction book, people might read it and love it. Who knows? It could even be a bestseller. When someone claims to be reading the truth directly from the Akashic Records, from the sacred neutral perspective, we rightfully feel a bit uptight, and some bridle instinctively. One of the obstacles is our programming. Another is what others will think of us. A word to the wise, separate the message from the messenger. It's too easy for the control paradigm to hoist someone up to guru-like heights, then drop them in a sea of controversy and doubt. The message becomes lost, becoming entangled in personality. India has popularized sex drama. Take what you like and leave the rest. This information bridges enormous time frames, stimulating us to contemplate options such as three falls of Atlantis and three falls of Lemuria, time wars that go back over 50 million years, battles between the dark and the light with the eventual invasion of 15 very clever and powerful multidimensional beings who brought the Archons here to control them in incarnational grids. They also tricked the Anunnaki here to take over the management of the Earth population. The bulk of information makes sense to me, filling in pieces to many mysteries that have been kept from us by Earth's visual managers, the Vatican, royals, elite, bankers, mafia, and at the bottom of the scale, politicians. And if it's all made up, it's a terrific show. Until there is more comprehensive data, I hold all these potentials as possibilities in the cosmic scheme. It's that simple. We don't have to immediately decide what we believe or what we do not believe. Either or thinking is unconscious, and it's an indicator of sleep. Many will be prompted to awaken and to investigate further to discover what has really happened, most likely anything and everything. So that's kind of sums it up.
Excellent, thank you. So, again, we're coming back to the same thing that Nancy's talking about all the time, which is reality is what you think it is. How we create reality is how reality becomes for us. But what we don't realize is that our reality has been our thoughts have been created for us in order to create the reality that we are presented with. And it's in the thought that can be uncreated and unhooked from our brains, so that we can just use the brain for its, you know, computational and servo facilities, rather than trying to take over the whole show. You know, you don't want your chauffeur taking, you know, deciding where to go. Hey.
Huh. Well, you know, the other thing too is that one of the misperceptions that we have, and it's been a tough one for me to see through, is that we're constantly battling windmills, as was written in Don Quixote, the Man of La Mancha, and they're constantly tilting at windmills. And what that means is that we're being stimulated at the emotional and intellectual levels with information that's infuriating. I mean, it's absolutely maddening to find out that there's mining operations on the far side of the moon that have been going on for decades, that Dick Cheney is in charge of the Mars operation, there's a base already there, and that the corporations are sewing up everything that they can. And then, you know, like cockroaches, they devour everything and move on to the next thing. Well, they've got the moon wrapped up, and on the far side of the moon, it's lush and beautiful. Not lush, but there's rivers and, you know, it's a normal setting. The side we don't see. And on the other side, it's intentionally designed to make it look like craters. So, I had always thought that the moon was hollow and that it was a base. And it could, and there probably is a hollow moon. That holds various races, but that'll all be revealed. And you know, so I lost my train of thought.
Yeah, it was such a good train as well. It was going somewhere.
Yeah, it was chugging along. Yeah,
it seemed to have direction, and that's what this is one of the things that the the whole scope of this new information is so big. It's like, oh my God, my head, yes. My skull, it feels my skull has opened up like one of those observatory domes. and there's this kind of enormous vista of
wonders. Yes, I remember.
Excellent. Yeah. Thank you. Go on.
Okay. So we get pissed off about various things like the 911 being a false flag and, you know, the evil banksters, you know, stealing all the money in the debt system. And, I mean, you know, you pick your poison. And the most difficult thing to understand and to live from consistently is the idea that there isn't anything out there to get mad about. Everything is within us. That's a projection, a hologram, that we source from within because we are the creator gods. And we have the power of divinity and creation within us. So when we're projecting outside of ourselves, we're getting angry and we're giving the matrix our energy. That's how the matrix stays up. If you start focusing within and remember yourself, that all of that out there is a projection. It's not real. And you start doing the inner work, which is that of changing direction. You do an about face. You look at the world out there and everything out there is upside down and backwards. It's an earthly maze. So instead of getting identified and wrapped up and mad and angry about all these different concepts that are being constantly beamed at us, you simply realize it's just an illusion. And you do an about face and you go within yourself for the answers because that's where they all reside. They've always been there. Just like Dorothy and home. She goes through all of Oz trying to get home and she finally clicks her heels and she's there. And it turns out to be a dream. Or was it? And it's the dream world. It's kind of like the movie Inception, where everything, we're going deeper and deeper into the holodeck. And some of us have volunteered to go in really deep in order to make a shift on all these different levels that have to be timed perfectly. And if you've seen the movie, you know that there are triggers in each one, and they have to be timed down to the nanosecond. Well, that's how I see things, that everything is actually in perfect synchronicity, and at a certain moment, all of these different layers or dimensions or realities are going to collapse like a pancake. And maybe the Twin Towers is a good metaphor for that, because it signals the end of duality, except that there was a third building that fell, which wasn't hit by anything, and it collapsed in a heap in its own footprint as well.
Well, you see, the triple nature of reality is one of the things that the esoterics teach that makes everything kind of take on a different view, is that there's not only duality, but there's also unity and triplicity, which are the other sides, you know, because you've got the one and the two and the three. And so, like you say, you know, there were three buildings that fell, and I think they really wanted five in all, and they wanted to have the Pentagon and maybe the White House.
Oh, yeah, right,
So yeah, there are five buildings in all. So there are three buildings, and I think I've had a whistleblower talking about the technology that was used to bring down the tower. Or not to bring down, but basically to scoop out. In order to see, the thing is that there was a catastrophe bond, an insurance policy that had that stated that the building had to be collapsed to the height of one story, and if that wasn't triggered, then they wouldn't get the $2 billion. You know, the however much it is. This is the Larry Silverstein thing. And this was backed off against the pension fund of the firemen as collateral.
Oh,
right. So this is big money. This is how big money moves, and pension funds.
Oh, huge!
So
huge, because there was gold moved out. There was $3 billion, $3 trillion. It was. I mean, it just. It's endless.
Endless. The $2.3 trillion the day before, the whole thing. Anyway, just to my things. There were at least five technologies. There was a baby nuke in the basement to make a big hole for what remained of the building that was then mined, so that it would then collapse into the hole in the middle. It imploded the building. I have seen a building imploded with my own eyes, and when I saw the building, the Twin Towers, they didn't fall. They were demolished. That was actually a very badly done demolishment, because one of them didn't fall properly, you know.
Right.
And it like the head tilted, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, to me that was a badly done thing, and they nearly didn't get the payout. But the idea is that they used a beam.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so here's the thing. Well, I've got a whistleblower. I had a whistleblower who said that the beam was generated in Guam, as a facility, like a heart facility in Guam, that then bounced the beam off a series of military UFOs that created between them a plasma triangle, a plasma plate, which then acted as a mirror for this beam. And that was just the vertical beam. And then, all right, so just to get really sci-fi, they then teleported another beam from into a barge on the river. There's the mystery pyramid of the barge. And that acted as the cross beam. So you got your vertical beam coming in from reflected down the sky by these TR-3s, or whatever, TR-5s probably, and they reflected this beam vertically, and then he said that it was just like rewriting a hard drive of reality by having these two beams cross, and where they crossed, now let me see exactly, he said it would... a time domain. They were transported. All the positive, the even-numbered elements were transported to a time domain. That was his exact words. If you understand what that means, you will understand where all the rest of the building went.
Oh yes.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I think I understand that one.
Okay,
that
so not many people know this, but these are some of the guests that I've had. It's crazy stuff, and it's kind of the science. I call it black science.
Yes. this makes more sense than anything I've heard yet.
Yeah. So they had a series of technologies. I think David Wilcox said there were five. So how many have we got so far? So we got the teleportation. Cup of tea, I'm dry as a bone. Teleportation and the scalar beam and the round vehicles and the mini nuclear weapons, I suppose they're patent technology, let alone the holographic technology for faking the impact and the essentially Hollywood technology of blowing the side of the building off.
Yes.
Because there was a woman standing there and she didn't seem to be melted like steel, you know. So they basically blew the side of the building off. It's like a big James Bond film.
Absolutely.
And that they used MK Ultra techniques. And also just a plain installation. You know, we're installing these CO2 monitors in the lift shaft, and they've got to be spaced at 15-meter intervals, you know. And they're all their little package, and they've all got a radio control in them. All they need to do is be triggered, and boom, they're all off. Like firecrackers, like 11 times a second. Hey, Nancy, what do you think?
Well, yes, and not to toot my own horn, but... I've got a fiction out there that discusses a lot of what you've just discussed that is something to hand somebody who doesn't want to listen to the truth, because they can say, oh, it's a story, it's fiction. But it brings up most of what you've said, although you've said some other things that aren't in the book. But they can get that. It's called The 9/11 Crusade, and they can get that on cosmicreality.net or then go to Amazon. But it just, it's amazing to see that people that have actually were having problems with 9/11 they didn't even know about, they start the book and they get to the same place and they all stop, because there is a tremendous amount of post-traumatic stress in people regarding that event. People that do not have that kind of really, they really weren't paying that much attention, even though it was horrendous, but they didn't let it get into their heads and their souls. Those people will read the book and go, this is fiction? I don't think this is fiction. And they see the truth in it. So 9/11 Crusade, it's a novel. It's fiction. It's
yep. Nancy, you know? I don't want to cut you off, but we're right at the end of the show. And so people can go to cosmicreality.net and find links to get the book there. Excellent book. Lance White from BBS Radio, galactichistory.com. You can also find lance.white.3348 on facebook.com. Thank you so much, brother. It's been like an old family meeting, a fireside chat indeed. I got my fire running. It's been lovely. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lance. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you so much, Nancy. There we go. There's the music. See? Perfect. Everything perfect in its time, in its moment. Divine timing. Beautiful. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.